It is Thursday the 12th of September, and this is episode 181 of Digital Outbox. Hello, we're back. Sorry, we've been away for a week. I say we've been away. I've been sulking. My race didn't go very well.
but let's not sully the rest of this evening.
Yeah, let's not sully that. But it didn't go well, and then I needed a day off, so I missed my recording date, unfortunately. But that means that we've got an awful lot to get going through. I'm Chris, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher. I am refusing to make any sort of racing puns. I was so tempted there. It was like on the tip of my tongue, and I was like, oh no, don't say it.
Yeah, Ian's worried for my mental state, and it could go downhill. let's get on. Nokia, they've been sold, or rather, Microsoft bought them.
Madness! This was like the big news last week. It was just like,
yeah. So this is what we missed out on. Sorry.
Yep, and this is like, this is total bonkers.
Yeah, so they've spent how much is it? 5.4 billion euros buying Nokia. And what it actually sounds like is not quite buying Nokia. It's always licensing Nokia, it sounds more like.
Yes.
Licensing and stealing people.
Stealing 32,000 people. So it's a lot of people. And also getting back Stephen Elop, who was a Microsoft executive, who many people thought was like a doppelganger and was heading over to Nokia to kind of kill the business for the sake of Microsoft. And they've now all kind of rejoined. There's a lot of bitterness. You know, if you go, there's quite a few bloggers from Nokia, some of them quite anonymous, who are in an absolute rage about this. They just feel that they've been, you know, they've warned about this for years and it's happened and everybody just let it happen.
Well, I mean, they can say that. They can say whatever they like, but the fact is their company is not, well, was not doing very well, and that's why they could get bought for that much money, because their market share, all the, you know, the financials, they're all collapsed, basically.
And they've run out of money. I mean, one of the things that came out kind of a couple of days after the initial kind of shock was that they basically took $1.5 billion of immediate financing. You know, basically, they had no money and Microsoft had to give them cash to keep going.
And and that must be, you know, if they're developing something, I mean, we've not heard about it, they're developing anything they need particularly cash for. So if that's just running cash, that's serious issues, because that's 1.5 million worth of people's salaries and stuff like that, which they needed, otherwise they were going under. So yeah. I don't think Nokia can be too upset about that. They've at least got another chance. But whether Microsoft's the right partner for them in this environment where Apple and Google basically have 90% share of the market.
Absolutely. And again, I mean, and in some ways, it does tie up. I mean, Ballmer has said for a while now that they wanted to become that, you know, that total vertical integration. You know, so they're responsible for hardware and software. You know, the Apple way. You know, that's the way they see themselves, moving to. But the bit that I don't get is this: they already kind of had this anyway. You know, Nokia was the main player for Microsoft's mobile products. I can't see any other company now licensing Windows, you know, for their own hardware, when Microsoft are going to say, well, you know, we're going to do our own as well. It just doesn't make sense.
I think the point is Microsoft had already jumped in bed with Nokia. Nokia, you know, thinking they could help each other out. But as it goes out, Nokia looks like they were about to go under, and Microsoft had to, maybe they just felt compelled they had to do it, because otherwise they were going to lose everything they'd, you know, put in place.
And it also makes me think, you know, Ballmer definitely wasn't planning to go a couple of weeks ago. That was a definite push.
You know, I'm
more and more convinced. You know, the restructuring had just started, you know, a week after he says, by the way, in the next year I'm going. And also most of these big companies, when somebody big goes, it's like, you know, unless it's a scandalous resignation or a death, you know, or illness that forces, you know, somebody's hand, it is usually by the way, I'm stepping down and here's my replacement. It's not by the way, I'm stepping down, and see sometime in the next 12 months, basically when the board have made their mind up.
And some people have said that, you know, Elop or whatever his name is a good candidate for replacing him there.
Yeah,
so
people have talked about him for a while. And I guess the other thing is that the conference call about this deal, lots of scripted answers from Balmer, and Elop just sat quietly, and he wouldn't rule him out, but wouldn't rule him in. It was just all very planned.
Very political, yeah.
Yeah.
But say, even if this all goes very swimmingly, it's hard to say how or see how they could actually make an impact on this market now. They're late to the party now. They've got a bit part to play, but I don't think they're ever going to see the big dollars that... I think the big dollars will probably run out by the time they get a big share. Mind you, we said that about other things. So
We have done. Remember, we criticised ourselves for saying, like, Nokia's dead. Mm. And it's interesting, like, how close those throwaway comments were. You know, it's...
Yeah. A lot of industry comment can cause companies to die just by that.
Absolutely.
You know, the rumors
and
stuff.
Apple were almost dead back in the 90s. I mean, they were days away from being...
Yeah, it shows how much it changes, doesn't it? And it's changed. It changes quicker because things move quicker.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of little kind of stat things that I put in. Like Microsoft spent $7.1 billion on Nokia when Skype cost them $8.5 billion.
So actually, if you think about it like that, it's amazing value.
But in 2007, Nokia's market share was 48.7%. It's now 3.5, which is I mean 6 years.
Yeah.
Another thing: why did they not buy RIM? You know, so RIM's basically saying we're for sale right now. I just find it strange that Microsoft, if you look at it, I mean, in the corporate world, they still are king, you know, by a mile. Why not?
Maybe
buy
they will
RIM?
Buy RIM as well, but they're into these kind of percentages that then people start looking at them. I don't think you could ever take their market share as a percentage, though.
But maybe if you buy all the companies that have got like 0.2% market share, you get up to like eventually 3.5%.
They've got their patents alongside. They've licensed Nokia's patents, so they've at least got those points of leverage. Let's get onto the spying. Like talking about this at the moment, like everyone else does. Pretty much, us and America, we kind of circumnavigate every privacy going. When it comes to spying, they've got around most of the publicly available encryption tools and have backdoors in or ways of smashing the encryptions.
I doth my cap to you, young sir. Not only in episode 11 did you predict Google goggles, because that was my little clip, and I'll throw it in just now, and I know you won't hear it, but never mind. Augmented reality, but it does look like a real growing market. But the only kind of, I guess, silly thing is you do a little bit of a twat walking around looking at your phone.
Maybe they should develop some goggles.
Well, you do wonder where it's. But a few months, years ago, I can't remember what it was, you said everything out there is hacked anyway, and it's all, everybody knows everything. And it turns out that was true.
So there you go. I am, a super sleuth. Or maybe it's me that's hacking everything. Basically, this comes out as part of the Guardian reports, and it says, you know, even pretty much it's saying any commercial product, anything that kind of says we protect you from, you know, all these things, they've either put backdoors into the standards, which they control anyway, or they've got the hardware to break it open, or, you know, or other methods. You know, they've even got moles potentially in place, putting backdoors ready for, you know, them to peek in and see what's going on. I mean, It just feels a little bit horrible living in a world where the norm is that they feel the right to look everywhere.
Yes. And I
think more and more people are feeling like that now.
I was really surprised because they did talk about how all the encryption that people think is protecting them is actually already blown wide open. And that was a bit that was a big surprise. And still internet companies are saying, don't really think so. It is encrypted, it is protected. Even last night, Facebook and Yahoo are basically saying, well, we kind of deny all the colluding that's going on, but also if we can't really see anymore, or else we'll go to jail.
So they're not allowed to tell you they are colluding. But plus, I guess it's in the NSA and, you know, GCHQ's best interest to sort of pretend like, even if it's not true, pretend like they can go and have a look everywhere, because it makes people more worried and, you know, all those kind of things. But and they live off of us being worried. That's the problem.
No, absolutely. And government loves fear right now. And I just wish there was a bit more detail.
Absolutely. It's a bit smoke and mirrors.
It's all very generic.
Remember, it's all for your safety, Ian. All for your safety.
Although
I bet you're feeling really safe.
I feel really safe. I did find out one thing that was interesting. Tor, which is that...
decentralized IP routing service.
Yep.
Anonymous internet browsing, basically.
Yep, 60% of its funding, US government.
So who's putting the nodes there that's filtering these things around? Yeah, there we go. Ministry of Sound, they've been suing Spotify. Now, what could they possibly have done to make Ministry of Sound sue them?
Let people make playlists.
What? How can they sue them for that?
Because Ministry of Sound spend hours, days, months, weeks of talent creating these playlists.
It must be incredibly hard work.
It must be. Now, I take issue with this because the report that was on TV were talking about how we mix them and do X, Y, and Z, and it's like, but what you're suing for is not saying that people are mixing.
Yeah, because Spotify doesn't mix them and loot them in. No.
No, what they're suing them for is basically people can put together a playlist in the same order that Ministry of Sound does. And Ministry of Sound reckon that takes them days to do.
It must take hundreds of people hours and hours because little kids have never done that in their back bedroom putting a tape together for their best mates.
And how dare they, Spotify lets them use the same album art and even call it Ministry of Sound.
Shock, horror.
if I had the... I know this is kind of petty. I would just call it Ministry of Pound and put a whole load of playlists up right now. All of them just called Ministry of Pound.
There we go.
And we should have a campaign. Don't buy any more Ministry of Sound rip-off albums of Ibiza Chill 20XX because it's just all the same.
But it's mixed, Ian. It's incredibly hard.
I know, but the annoying thing is a lot of it's not.
Amazon's Kindle Matchbook. Basically, this is the equivalent of their music matching service, but done for their Kindle. So basically, if you have a physical book that you bought from Amazon, you will be able to get it onto your Kindle for either free or a very low cost. Sounds good.
It does sound good. A lot of people didn't actually know too much about the kind of music matching, so their AutoRip. Mm. And I've kind of told a few people, and they're like, really? I can log in and get all this for free.
Yes, you can.
So a good move, because certainly if you fired up Kindle and you could see all those books all of a sudden for a low price or for free, you'd be like...
And it'd be books that you bought ages ago. Maybe you've even misplaced them or lost them or they've gone damaged or whatever, and you're going on holiday fancy reading it again. So let's do this and get another 99 cents into Amazon's big pockets.
It's funny, I'm trying to convince my mum's, for her age, quite the digital convert. The one thing she won't do is read digital. But she gave away a whole load of books recently, and I was like, see, if I had this digitally, it wouldn't take up any room. It'd be on your Kindle. And it's going on.
Book readers do swear by it, but then again, book readers who have converted seem to, you know, take to the Kindle just because it does feel like reading a book, basically.
Yes.
There you go. 10,000 books available on this Kindle Match service when it launches some point in October.
Should point out, you're a UK podcast. This is US only at the moment, but most Amazon things, it does kind of drift over.
Yeah, Amazon are pretty good at getting things over here, so that's good. Android KitKat. Now, here was a surprise mood. So the next version of the Android operating system is going to be called KitKat. They'd said before it was going to be Key Lime Pie. And they've also said that there was no money passed hands in the brokering of this deal. So KitKat have certainly, or Nestle have certainly been ramping up their advertising based on it, though.
What a lot of corporate guff.
Yeah. I wonder what KitKat does look cool as an Android thing.
Come on.
But it was a bit
shady. What if the next one was Android like M&Ms?
Well, yeah, it'd be McDonald's because they got more money to spend, haven't they?
But no money changes hands.
No, exactly. But I bet they've got a big advertising.
They have. So in Britain and America.
AdWords account.
In Britain and America and a few other countries, you can now buy special Android KitKat bars that allow you to win competitions and all that. And it gets the Android name out there because certainly Google's been, I guess.
Look, for corporate, this is brilliant. I mean, they get a load of advertising off the back of all these massive firms. It's great.
Because recently everybody's just been talking about Samsung, HTC, Apple. And then you've had Nokia, and it's what's kind of got lost is, hold on. Android's actually driving all this, not Samsung and not HTC and not LG.
But there you go. I mean, like you say, what's going to happen going forward? It's a bit shameless and a bit. And Nestle also, they're considered a dodgy company every now and again, aren't they? They've had a bad history at times for some of their acts.
And Google haven't.
There we go.
Do no evil.
Google's browser, they're also they've launched things called Chrome apps. Now, these are very similar to the kind of in-browser Chrome store things that you had before, which basically were bookmarks to web services. But they go deeper than that in because they run effectively a Chromeless window, so you don't have your browser, your address bar and things like that going on. And they can also get access to your local operating system, so they can work offline more like apps can. It kind of feels like Java replacement. Java's dying a death, but this is another way of getting apps that can use your local operating system. You know how Adobe Air tried to do a similar thing, didn't
it? Yeah.
It kind of got killed by Apple. So it sounds kind of like that, but it also does mean that a lot of these apps will only run in Chrome because they will use Chrome specific stuff as well as the web standards. I just wondered whether we're going down and, you know, the old EA, days when you had compatibility issues there, and are we being pushed into that direction again?
I've seen other people saying the same, and even today I think there was a whole load of what was the name of the graphics tool? Snapseed? Am I saying that right?
I've heard of Snapseed.
Is that the one at Googlebot? Yeah, it is. So Snapseed today, Googlebot Snapseed, and what they've announced today is there's a whole lot of these editing tools that are available through Google Plus. And it looks really slick, but only if you use Chrome. They don't work in Firefox.
And this is still clearly offshoots from their Chrome desktop, you know, absolutely, the Chromebook.
And I think what we're seeing is when Chromebook came out, what is it, 2 years, 3 years now? And at the time, it was a bit like, ugh, that's a really, you know, it is like a netbook pretty much, or you're buying a PC with Chrome on it, nothing else. But you're starting to see that it's actually quite a, there's quite a rich ecosystem there now that if you just wanted a simple, you know, laptop, it's ideal.
It's kind of, in some ways, more feature-rich than like a tablet, basically, because it's like tablet-type functionality where you have apps and you can run individual apps, but with a bit more hardware behind it and a bit more kind of, you know, you've got a keyboard, for example, you know. So interesting, anyway. Xbox Music. Basically, you can now have iOS and Android apps to listen to your Xbox Music account that no one has.
But what an amazing change for Microsoft. And I mean, it's like, and it might be a last throw of the dice, but, you know, it's like the realization we need to be elsewhere because we're not winning.
So Xbox Music started out on Xbox, must have done, but they've spread out of that now. Is that right?
Yeah, but also it was a Windows 8 kind of tie-in as well, so they had a kind of Windows 8 app which was all a bit clunky and it was kind of nastily done, whereas a new one they've done an updated app and it actually just looks like a normal music playing app. So instead of trying to do all the kind of tiles and stuff, they've said
actually use it.
Yeah. and I think a lot of it spun off of Zoom. Remember there was the Zoom, and
they were doing all right around Zoom. You know what, do you remember what you talked about the Zoom? I remember talking at the time about if they made a phone that was the Zoom phone, because they made the Zoom player that looked awesome, had their new operating system. Had they done that then, I think they'd have been in a better place. They should pay me a lot of money they should listen to Digital Outbox.
Especially the brown one. The brown one was a winner. That was high point in devices that came out. Brown Zoom.
Well, until Apple tells us everyone that they really do want brown stuff, then no one will believe it.
Gold.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty brown to me. Come on to that later.
But anyway, also, I was just going to say the free web playback is interesting as well, because it's not only that you can go on the website and play for free, but as you search in Bing, you're going to be able to play full tracks and search results. Yeah.
So if you search for your favorite band,
else is really doing.
Ian searched for Barbara Streisand or something, then
Susan Boyle.
Pops you'll pop.
Susan Boyle.
The Boyle, get the Boyle playing. We've got the Xbox One launch date. This was much speculated. We thought it was going to be early November, but actually it's kind of mid-November now, so 22nd. And right smack in the middle of the PS4's US and UK launch. So there you go.
Exciting.
News from my end was I didn't even pre-order. I actually ended up buying one today. Because the only store that had a day one pre-order with Forza, which is what I'd get anyway, I had to pay it straight up.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've actually bought one. Whether I actually see it, I don't know. I think Curry's was the only one that had it, so I've actually placed an order with a company I don't really expect to see my product.
Jeez. Well, and I guess the only one I have is mine's with Amazon. the chances are it'll come through like in the Saturday.
everywhere else, the day one console, the one, yeah, they've all gone. So with FIFA or with things, so Currys was the only place left. I didn't want to put all of them. Well, maybe. Who knows? A company probably won't be there by the time we launch.
And I guess out of people I know, Bernie Licks also kind of plucked down and got one.
Yeah,
so there'll be three of us.
Well, I don't know how many. I don't mean how many pre-order consoles they had, but they've sold out everywhere. So I mean, like I said, it doesn't mean anything because it could just be 10. But shows that they're getting a bit of traction because they made someone like me go and buy one in the end.
And a little bit of nostalgia. 8-year anniversary of the Xbox launch in America.
Yeah, 8 years. There you go. Sony have been making lots of announcements. I say lots too. we've got a new thinner and lighter Vita, and it's also got some longer battery life. Does this interest you?
Not really. They're swapped from an OLED to an LCD screen. I guess the reason I found it surprising was it just seemed like, you know, it was only 3 or 4 weeks ago there was a whole other Sony announcements, and it feels and they kind of really, you know, stressed the importance of the Vita and all these tie-ups and what was just the price. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, but the price reduction looks like they were just stock. Let's get rid.
I thought OLED was more energy efficient than LCD.
Allegedly, and I guess the other thing as well, it was supposed to be better quality. And I've not seen video, but I've seen side-by-side screenshots now. And you couldn't tell too much, although the new one does look to be a smaller screen. And there was some colour differences as well.
I'm pretty sure OLED has won the war of, you know, the best displays for small devices.
Absolutely.
It's romped home. Looks much better. So it's kind of, I guess it's just technology and money going behind that. But there you go. So looking like $190. So it's still pretty expensive, I guess. When they're competing with something that you have anyway, which is your phone.
But considering that I'm about to spend £600 on a phone.
Yeah. Are you now? We'll come on to that a bit. So PlayStation Vita TV. So this is a little box that's going to sit under your under your TV, and is kind of Sony and PlayStation's way of getting a smart box under your TV. But it will play Vita games. So that's quite an interesting angle to take. So it's got a Vita slot, but it effectively plugs into your TV.
Yes, at first I was like, wow, that's really good. And it's cheap, so I think it was like equivalent to like $100, $150.
Yeah,
$99. Yeah. It's tiny, so 6x10 centimeters, you know, so this, you know, they are just like little hockey pucks sitting there. Another thing was it acts as a secondary device to PS4. So if somebody was watching, like, I think in the demo they showed you like somebody watching a film on the PS4, but you can kind of like, you know, it's almost like stream the video playback from the PS4 on this device, so you can be in another room.
So it's like an AirPlay device for PlayStation, effectively.
Yep. So you can be playing the game through a PS4 controller, but the game, all the actual chunterings happening on the PS4, and it's just sending the video over.
There you go.
Only confusing thing, it doesn't play all Vita games, and it's like, that just sounds a cop-out.
Yeah, that's unusual as well. It shows they don't have the proper internals there. We've also had EFA that we kind of missed out on. Basically, lots of announcements made. EFA's technology and hardware stuff, isn't it, basically? And a lot of the big firms get there. So Sony made some more announcements. So we've got the Xperia Z1 smartphone. Big selling point was it's 4K, is it? Is that right?
Yeah, so this was another one of these 5-inch 1080p displays. But bizarrely, and I mean, Sony weren't the only ones. There was a few of them, and they were talking about, oh, we've got a 4K camera. It's like, why?
Can't play it back.
and I think a couple of them were doing things like, well, instead of 4K, we can do some 1080p, and we can do it in slow-mo.
That seems to be the latest thing, actually. Everyone's obsessed with slow-mo.
Yep, and I thought, well, that's fine, but to be sitting there and putting up and, we can record in 4K.
And no one has a 4K TV at the moment to play. Well, no one has anything 4K to play back at the moment. So, they have to be ahead of the curve, don't they? Otherwise, you know, when 4K kicks off, they're not going to be there.
No.
So another interesting device, the smart lens. Basically, it's it's kind of like a lens with a bit of a box on, but you have to use your phone as the viewfinder. Is that right?
Yeah. So all the internals of the camera are in the lens. At first, when the first initial pictures came out, they had it on the back of, it's almost like hanging off an iPhone or hanging off an Android device, and saying, here's this $300 lens you can add to your camera. And I looked at it and thought, not your camera, to your phone. I looked at it and thought, madness. You know, and I've bought
Why the hell did you do that?
Yeah, and I've bought one of the little auto clips, which was like 50, 60 quid. And it's fine, gives you a better picture. But you're not going to spend like 300. But the bit that I'd missed was, you can place this anywhere. You know, it doesn't have to be attached to your camera. It wirelessly talks to the phone. So they were showing you this kind of almost like a concept video or concept image, but basically this lens can sit anywhere or point anywhere, and then you've got your phone controlling it, and the pictures then get sent back.
So the lens is effectively a camera all on its own, but, you know, without all the paraphernalia that comes with actually having a camera. So, clever stuff.
It's clever, unique. I don't see anybody else doing it. So
I'm not sure who's going to buy it, though.
Because
you know, you can't put it in your pocket or anything, can you? Really, it has to be.
Oh, you
around.
Can. I've got big pockets.
You wouldn't want a 400 quid worth of squishable. Anyway, smartwatch 2.
Oh,
do we have to talk about smartwatches? Are they not completely irrelevant and pointless?
I think Sony is, so we can move on.
Who would buy a smartwatch?
Who would buy a smartwatch from Sony?
But basically, it seems like everyone is trying to release these smartwatches, which effectively act as a second screen to your mobile phone that you've already got a screen on and is already in your pocket. Lazy bastards.
Bernie Lick loves his.
There you go. He has to love it because he paid enough money for it.
At that geek conference in London that he was at, he was the only person there with a Pebble.
There you go. That's how unique and... Even the geeks don't want them.
I don't know. There was something like 60,000 of the geekiest geeks from Europe. I know Brian was the only one with a Pebble. Get it right up you.
King of the geeks.
Oh, he was. Yeah, you got a hotel room out of it.
So Sony Smartwatch 2. And then we had the Samsung also released a... Well, that was a bit while back now, didn't they? They announced that, but it was massive. He literally had to hold his arm up with his other arm.
we'll come on to that in a minute, because I want to rant about that.
So Samsung Galaxy Note 3. So basically more of the same, but a bit more inside.
5.3 inch screen.
Yeah, and there's more antenna stuff going on, so you've got LTE in there, and a 13 megapixel rear camera. That's massive.
It is. And I actually looked all right. There's so many people who seem to use these things and think they're great. Yeah, I just think they look hideous.
People, like, there is a market for the phablet. There is. So you know, the idea of having a stylus is still attractive to people, certainly people who are used to, you know, making notes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You've got a stylus for your iPhone. Crikey out loud.
I've got
crikey
four.
So why are you turning your nose up then?
I still don't use any of them. See if anybody wants one, just email me. In fact, I gave one to Shaq. I took pity.
Anyway, that's going to be available. Is it available this year?
October.
October, yes. So not very far away.
Sorry, actually, it launched September 25th. This is what I liked. Launched at September 25th in 149 countries, then worldwide by October. Like, what's left, Samsung? No, Apple launched in like 8 countries, and then like a few months later, it's into like 149 on the 25th, worldwide by October.
It's because they're that much better. So this is it, Galaxy Gear smartwatch. The fun never
This annoyed
ends.
Me.
Did it now?
Yeah, because not only, so they put out obviously like a kind of, almost like a Tonka version of it into VentureBeat and says, here's our Tonka version. And everybody was like, there's no way that can be it. And you're right, there's no way to it. It was another millimeter thinner. This thing's massive. And see, when I saw all these comments going by about people talking about it, and somebody says, bigger than the Pebble. And at that point, it's just like, you failed. You've absolutely failed.
And this was the Pebble which you couldn't get your sleeve over. Yeah.
I mean, Brian's lost almost half a stone just since buying the Pebble.
So he could wear his Pebble.
But all joking aside, this is probably the this is probably the smartest of the watches we've seen so far, but still is like...
Yeah, you know, it's 320 by 320 resolution, and that's a big selling point because that's high.
And I don't think that was so bad, and the screen didn't look so bad. It's just the fact the design looked horrible. Size-wise, it's just too big. And they've put a camera in the wrist strap. It was like, no, nobody wants this. You're just throwing stuff like this. This is just like the feature tick box. Need a camera? Yeah, put it in the wrist strap. And you're like... I'm going to be sitting there taking really rubbish pictures on this camera.
I think Shaq may have hit the nail on the head, as much as it pains me to say. They haven't got anything to copy, and therefore they can't come up with this thing. As soon as Apple do one, if they do one, they probably won't because they're pointless. As soon as Apple do one, then they'll be able to come up with a great design.
I was also surprised that there's a lot of rumors that they were going to launch and it was going to be supported by a lot of phones, but no, it's only the Note 3 and the Galaxy Note 10 tablet. And similarly, there's updates coming out for other Galaxy phones, and they've also said that they're going to support Android and potentially iOS going forward as well.
Okay.
And that'll come in the future, but I felt that was like, we'll see it now and everybody will forget.
Yeah, exactly. No one's going to buy it anyway, so it's fine. And we've also got the next Galaxy Note 10.1, so basically again an upgraded tablet from Samsung as well,
and iPad.
Yeah. And then here we go onto at the Apple event. So this happened. It was Tuesday.
I
confess to not having watched the keynote. I have caught up with what was said at the keynote, and I'm pretty glad I didn't watch the keynote, to be honest. Until you tell me that I need to.
You need to.
Oh, really? So they went through iOS 7.
And thankfully, they took like 5 minutes. Because previously...
Okay, which is unusual because they normally show it all again, don't they?
Yep, previously they spend like half an hour going through the tent poles and all the same things. Mm. But all they did was put a video up, and the guy spoke through the video of what was there. And it was actually, I mean, it really was a quick whiz. And it said, here's all these new features, out September 18th.
There you go. So it's pretty close then, next week, basically.
Next Wednesday. Next Wednesday, you can ruin your parents' lives by putting on iOS 7. So and I have the Gold Master, is out to developers. I have it on my iPhone and my iPad. And it's broke my iPad.
There we go. Brilliant.
And I think it's actually just a bug on my iPad. I'm waiting for Shaq to do his tonight.
kids as well.
But basically, any keyboard input takes 20 seconds to display. That's why it feels like a bug.
That's not very efficient.
No. But on the iPhone, working like a trooper.
There you go. So it's got this new look, control center, notification center, search from anywhere, cards, multitasking, Siri improved, new ringtones. Camera with filters, photos. Oh yeah, grouping of photos, wasn't it? And share sheet. I can't even remember what share sheet was.
It's just a far nicer way of sharing and lots more options as well.
Sounds like share sheet. AirDrop, iTunes Radio, and like I say, out September next week. 1 week to go.
iTunes Radio, not for UK.
There we go. iWork. So they're basically any new iOS device is going to come with iWork. Sweet. Yep. That sounds like a good thing.
That is a good thing. Lots of gnashed teeth from people that have already bought it saying, I want a refund.
Absolutely.
And it's like, it cost you like £10.
It's not much. But it just means that it's going to be actually used rather than, you know, used. And they want to be seen as a productivity device as well now. So there you go. That's a good solution.
The weird thing, why not GarageBand? That's only, all the productivity was, that's the only one it was missing. It was like, why? Why leave that?
Probably because it's selling all right. The other ones aren't. and then we've got the two new models, the iPhone 5C and the iPhone 5S. Let's talk about the iPhone 5C, which is their kind of low end model, right?
I've got ranty about this week. Lots of people at my work have been like, wasn't very cheap. You know, I thought they were releasing a cheap one, and it's like nobody said they were releasing anything. It was all the pundits decided when they realised it was 5C that was a cheap phone they were releasing to combat the Android devices. Hence, everybody thought there's a cheap phone coming. Even my boss was like, you know, if it was cheaper, because it's a lot more expensive than I thought it would be. It's like, but nobody.
Well, heck, it's $99 on contract. That's pretty much what you expect from an Android device, really. So
yep. And basically, yeah, the 5C is the same as the 5, but it's a plastic back. So the 5 disappeared. Usually what they do is they put the last year's model on sale at cheaper rates, and you've got the new phone. This year they've done slightly different. They've killed the 5. They've got the 5C. Comes in 5 colours. There's some crazy silicone cases for it as well, which look awful. But hey, if you're into that kind of thing, great. But it's the same innards as the 5.
Yeah, so it's the same phone, but like I say, cheaper. They went to great pains to explain how they had made this plastic phone feel really solid by giving it a nice, unique internal structure and blah, blah, blah. Really having to push hard to say this is exciting. But effectively, you're buying the same kind of internal product, basically.
And I guess what is slightly interesting, it's not that interesting, but when you fire up, when you've got iOS 7, it knows what colour phone you use and it sets the background.
Yes, that's quite clever.
And I can see some people saying that's why there was this kind of see-through feeling. If you look at all the parallax scrolling and parallax in depth, and you thought, yeah, okay, I can see that.
But it definitely ties in really well with their new direction, and that's why they've done it. And that's probably, you know, the whole thing. You can see that they're working towards that.
Yes.
However, the 5S doesn't really, because this is a replacement. They're top of the range product, basically. Looks almost the same as current 5, but so it comes in different colors.
Yep, and dimension wise it's exactly the same.
Black, gold and space gray.
You want a gold one, don't you?
I think the gold one looks a bit poop.
In fact, I've done that wrong. It's white, gold and space gray. I do apologize.
Is it white? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It says
in the show notes.
Basically, it's kind of a massive step up in internals as far as 64-bit chip. It's got more of everything, basically. And performance-wise, it's a massive, massive jump on from the 5. So you're talking exponentially faster rather than just a step up.
I was really surprised at 64-bit. I didn't, because there was some rumors like about a month ago, and a lot of developers actually poo-pooed it and said, don't be daft. You know, we've got the beta. We've got Xcode. None of it's 64-bit. Shut up.
But Xcode turns out it is 64-bit, or it will be.
Yeah, because they released it all on Tuesday night. So they basically said, here's a new beta. And also, here's Xcode. It takes a couple of hours to swap over to 64-bit. Gone with it.
Much, much discussion, though, about whether moving to 64-bit architecture is a good thing or not. Basically, around the fact that a 32-bit program can run on a 64-bit chip, but the opposite is not true. And obviously, to make full use of the 64-bit chip, it needs to be written specifically for it. And obviously, it can't be backwards compatible, and that's what Apple prides itself on. So it's maybe going to cause some headaches going forward. For now, it doesn't make any difference at all, really, because most all of the programs will be written for 32-bit, and it won't be using the full might of that chip yet.
I guess the thing I've always admired the most about Apple, and I wondered if they would do the same without Steve Jobs here, that they do tend to make these almost like bold step forward, you know, so moving over to Intel, moving to 64-bit, they kind of...
Yeah, it's a similar move to that Intel move, basically.
They really pushed on with that quite aggressively, even to the point of, like, you know, Adobe was like, what, 18 months, 2 years before they ported the programs over, and Steve Jobs kind of publicly slated them. I mean, at the same time, it took Apple 2 years to move iTunes over as well. They were 32-bit programs. It's not trivial. So I thought, and for me, it was like, wait a minute, is it a sign of things to come? You know, I'm more excited about an iPad with a 64-bit chip.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and that's probably where it's going to be more useful, for sure.
And a couple of people are starting to say, you know, is this the sign of they'll start to use their own chips in their laptops? You know, are they getting to a point, and not right now, but in like 2 or 3 years' time, where you would see a MacBook coming out that's powered by an A9 chip?
Well, ARM have been, you know, they've been making desktop chips for years and years and years. I mean, they're many, many years, and probably making the best chips. And okay, they've only just come to real prominence recently in smartphones, but actually before that, they're massively into it.
And it's funny, people always say as well, Apple are quiet, they're not doing anything. And it's some of these kind of background, almost like technological moves they make. It's
massive.
Yeah. The stuff they announced wasn't trivial.
No, but they did. I mean, they really had to work hard at trying to, you know, flash this up and make it sound like you wanted to buy it, because effectively they're offering you a plastic phone and the same phone in different colours.
But no, so absolutely.
So, you know, it's they had to work hard.
No, they did. And also, I mean, that's a good point. See, when you look at their website, it's the 5C that gets advertised first. And see, when you look at the actual product you know, launch, it's the 5C it's talked about first. That's the one they're wanting people to say, there's your new phone.
That's because that is the vision, isn't it? It's the colourful one. Yep. And the other one is there as the kind of leading geek light, but they know who's going to buy that. They already know. I'm talking to one of them. So basically, they're hoping that they've got more battery time in there. They're saying they have.
It's a slightly bigger battery. It came out tonight that actually the battery has, I think it's 10% bigger.
Kind of worrying that they have to do this by a big battery rather than more technology. But a bigger chip's going to use more power, so it needs a big battery.
But there's also, I keep on interrupting. I do apologize.
I keep interrupting you.
The other thing they did talk about was this M7 chip. So moving some of this kind of motion detecting off of the main chip onto this low powered chip.
And that will be looking at GPS, motion, movement, compass, things like that. So it's really refined, basically going into the fitness market, right?
Yep. So killing things like Fitbits and all the kind of add-ons. And also lots of people were like straight away, that'll be the chip that's probably inside an iWatch.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense, yeah.
And it does make sense, but everybody's just assuming that's coming next year.
Yeah, I know. Well, and it, as we've found out many times before, it's a load of baloney.
So Nike kind of announced that they're doing this Nike Plus Move bit of software that will tie in with Game Center and also tie in with what they can get out of this chip. So I'm sure there's going to be some nice new bits of software coming out soon.
And one of the biggest things was, their security, their Touch ID. So this was a fingerprint scanner, basically, that's embedded into their new home button on this leading phone, which you're going to be able to use to unlock your phone and to authorize payments, things like that.
Yeah, really nice. It looks, from everybody that's seen it's using it, it looks fast and reliable.
So many people, though, or so many times, fingerprint scanners and whatever in the past, whether it be secure doors or anything like that, they go wrong. They could be duped, they could be fooled, so we'll see.
Yes. I did actually notice somebody sent me a link, and I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm on the Daily Mail right now. Somebody sent me a link. Yes, forget losing personal data. Apple's iPhone 5S could cost you your fingers. Security expert warns thieves could go to extreme lengths to bypass the Touch ID. I tend to think if somebody's got your phone, there's bigger issues than them chopping their finger off.
Yeah.
A lot of people poo-pooed the idea that they were going to do this and saying Apple doesn't tend to go first with these things.
I just think they're putting their neck on the line because there's so much could go, you know, if it can be duped and tricked, then they're it's inbuilt in the chip. This is a massive recall.
I can't see them putting their neck on the line because if you think about it, I mean, at the moment, the passcodes are a 4-digit number, which you can look over somebody's shoulder and see dead easy. Or I think they said, was it 20% or 25%? It was something really low as the amount of people that actually use a passcode. So what they're saying is by having this, it'll almost automatically increase security by quite a bit because people will enable this.
If it's not 100% effective, long as there's no quick one, you know, the NSA haven't put in put a cross on here and then it lets you in kind of thing. They've got back doors everywhere.
I guess lots of security people were like, not lots of security, there was some poo-poo in it and people jumping on it. The image of your thumbprint or your fingerprint isn't stored in the cloud anywhere. It's not stored on the iPhone either. There's some kind of biometric type information is stored, but it's only stored on the actual iPhone, not in the processor, etc.
Like I say, the NSA will have got a mole in there that's put a little bit of absolutely exception coding in there for you.
But then they know everything anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, excuse me. Right, camera. They've upgraded their camera on this on the 5. The 5S. Their own lens, bigger, better aperture going on, takes better photos. Not crammed in any more pixels because they're big believers in not putting more pixels there, apparently.
Yep. And I think the one thing that stood out was this true tone flash, which just sounds like a buzzword, but I think it's got two LEDs now. One cools, one white. That's been seen in lots of things before. But what they're doing is that they're trying to measure and then fire off. They've got, seemingly there's 1,000 different levels they can fire off based on these two flashes. So they're trying to measure it and then fire off the one that will give you the best tone of your picture.
no other phone does it. I was sorry, well, no other camera. Does it.
And that's the bit I was surprised at. I was like, really?
You know, yeah, because you'll have professional studios who will have different light colored light boxes that they, you know, they use the flash, but to actually mix it, you know, as you're doing it or as, you know, as it's taking the photos, quite innovative, I would say.
Yeah.
And you know, and you can, you know, camera phones are notoriously bad at giving you harsh white light, aren't they? This, I guess, is aiming to get around, and good luck on them. Captures quicker and can do, I think it can do it slow-mo again, right?
Yeah. Everything's slow-mo. So and they showed a really nice video. I think that was probably one of the nicest demos that was on the keynote. They showed you somebody taking a video, and then just as you go into typical Apple, they've done the software really nice. You can then just zoom in an area, and that's the bit that goes slow-mo, and you play it back and it's normal speed, and then the bit where he's flipping the bike around is just now slow-mo. You don't have to do anything clever, fancy. It's just there and it does it. And it was like, wow, that's really easy.
And it's got burst mode, so it will actually take 10 frames per second, and it can do that for 2 seconds. And it will then try and make an intelligent guess of which one of those photos is the best one to go with, the sharpest and most informative.
Yep, and seemingly it's not just for 2 seconds. Seemingly it will just keep going.
Okay. Awful lot of photos being taken, yeah.
Yep, and it then tries to, as you said, it then tries to surface up the best one, and then you can say, actually, delete the rest, or you can keep them if you do want them.
Sounds very much like the Google Plus way of doing things.
Absolutely.
I've actually found works very well, actually.
Yep.
Quite surprised by Google Plus's ability to work out which is my best photo. So that was kind of it. The pricing for the 5S was expensive. So basically the top of the range is $709. That's an awful lot of money, isn't it? It's incredible. That's money. $629 for the mid version, $549 for the low end. Get leather cases with that one. And basically you can pre-order tomorrow.
No.
Oh.
You can only pre-order the 5C tomorrow.
Yes. Okay, so a week later.
Nash teeth.
Okay, so you've got to wait. And so this interests you enough, yeah? Is this in your cycle?
I actually swore I wasn't going to, but the three kind of geeky aspects of it are actually quite tempting to me.
So what is... Because I'm outside of the Apple fold. I don't see the temptation on this one. It is their S model. You know, it's their midterm.
And next year, I'm pretty sure they'll do a 4.5 or 5-inch phone. I'm convinced they'll do a bigger phone because there's so many people. I think the market is just migrating to it being that slightly bigger, 3.5 to 4 last year. I'm absolutely convinced they'll do it.
But they made massive pains of telling you how this phone is for your hand and your thumb still works. Whereas on these big phones, your thumb doesn't work very well because it can't reach.
Yeah, but marketing is a great thing. And when the market moves to some bigger phones, they'll move.
I'm happy to have that Mars bar because I don't think they will. I think they'll keep their phone. They've got their phone, they've got their small, you know, tablet, and they've got their big tablet.
They should make it an Android KitKat.
You know what? The only thing I really watched are the videos that they put up onto the website on the three products, and they have fallen into their own. They're almost a parody of themselves. Yeah. You know, there's so many parody movies now that when you watch it, you get this. You think
you can't tell
they're not taking the piss. This is actually them trying to be genuine. But now because they haven't moved it on, they've never moved on that. You know, from sitting in front of a white background and talking really earnestly about how much they care about all these things.
I don't mind the software guys. It's Johnny Ive does my head in. Yeah. And it was like, it's reassuringly, proudly plastic. Yeah. And you're just like...
Shut up.
Yeah, you're a cock.
I mean, you could tell they had to work really hard to sell how, you know, a plastic phone is better than a metal one. Or a glass one. So yeah, I just felt that's one thing. They've got to move that on. They've got to do something different because... They've fallen into themselves as far as it was hard to watch that without actually laughing at them.
And there is I'm pausing. There is a good chunk of my brain that actually absolutely agrees with you. But the bit that I kind of like, not about the videos, it's going back to this kind of idea of the cheap phone. Because everybody was screaming, you have to do a cheap phone, you have to compete. And we've seen it time and time again from Apple. They've said, no, we'll do what we want to do. And what we're doing is we'll put a phone out that we'll make some money on and we're proud of as a product. You know, and whether we slag off the... And I agree. The videos are parodies of themselves. They've just, you know, up their own arse. But I kind of don't, you know, I don't need to see that bit of it. You know, I know they make good products. I like the products they're making. I still like the ecosystem that's there. I just, I'm actually quite pleased that they're sitting there saying, here's what we're making. And yeah. and that's where we are. And we're not going to, you know, because how many other companies selling cheap phones are making money? There's not that many.
No,
you know, Samsung's won because of the volume. HTC can't make a profit. Nokia can't make profit. It's they're all struggling. It is a scary price, but it's a scary old price when you look at it. And I guess just going, you were saying, are you tempted enough? I was kind of thinking that next year a bigger phone and I should wait. And also I'm looking at the iPad thinking I'd get far more use out of a 64-bit, you know, really fast iPad right now.
When are we likely to see the new iPad though?
Next month.
So it's next month is that kind of time.
Everybody's predicting end of October, we'll see another keynote.
Okay. I mean, but again, I can't see the iPad being any more than a massive bump up in speed, but that for an iPad, that's great. That's what it needs.
Absolutely. Because I read so much on it and I watch videos on it and all that kind of good stuff.
But to be honest, the biggest thing they could do is give you a massive, even longer battery life. I know it's not too bad at the moment, but they could do even more.
And I think if I did buy an iPad, I'd be buying a keyboard as well. I know it kind of double down sitting, you're thinking just buy a laptop, but it isn't. I know.
No, it's different. It is different. I agree. I wouldn't have said that before, but I do now having had one. Yeah. And knowing the kind of use I get out of it. And where's your contract lying on the phones at the moment?
Well, I just buy pay as you go, so I'm not,
right. Okay, so you're out of contract. That's why you can just.
I'm never on a contract. So basically, it's like find somebody to spend £300 in my current phone, and I'll go and spend £600 in a new one. Is where my head's at. And it's a lot of money, and I might change. But the things that I've got, I unlock my phone so often. I use my phone so much. That touch, I know it's like first world problems, but it's like that is so nice. Camera, I've actually got into more and more taking pictures with the iPhone. You know, I've talked about auto clip and stuff. I've actually really enjoyed it, and it's like the camera upgrades are actually a big deal. 64-bit, not so much, but just having that better
as I say, the camera you've got with you is the camera you use most. So. Yeah.
So at the moment, I'm thinking it's a probable, it's a yes.
Whenever you say that, it tends to end up bought. So
we'll see. Not we, it's not 100%.
We always do it. And it nearly always happens. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, there you go. So that's an Apple fan. What he's thinking about it. So you basically it's enough to make you interested. That's good. There you go. That's the end of our podcast, and that is it. if you want to find out more, you can digitaloutbox.com, email, Twitter, digitaloutbox, Skype, digitaloutbox. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. You can read about my woes on academyracer.co.uk. Ian, where can we find you?
Ian did it as a blog. I am on Twitter as Reaper. And for your racing, it's not all over. You've got one final race of the season.
Yeah. No, it's still all to play for.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a little bit more pressure than there would have been, let's put it that way, which I'm kind of hoping I didn't have to take.
Rise to the challenge, man.
There we go. Ooh, good timing on my phone. I'll leave that. Speak to you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello? Bloody marketing call.
Oh, wouldn't it be good if it was Johnny Ive and we have tried so hard.